in to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello and welcome to episode 187 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. Are you feeling good, Sean?
I'm good. I'm reeling from the news you've been telling me.
I'm scaring you with horrendous ecological...
I couldn't believe it.
...environmental statistics.
That is amazing.
Do you want to reel it off?
That it takes 660 gallons of water to create one beef burger?
McDonald's burger, yeah.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, I watched a movie called Cowspiracy in my never-ending quest to become the proper environmentalist. Turns out I'm not one because I'm still eating meat and having dairy. And I think I need to go full-on vegan, really, to have the proper credentials. And, well, most of the population do as well if we want to stand any chance of averting serious climate change and all that stuff. So, yeah.
But how do you fancy trying something like Vegan Monday?
Well, that's actually mentioned in the...
Is it?
Documentary about Veggie Monday, you know. But it's basically said it's not a drop in the ocean. It's not even.
Yeah, but then the point isn't that. The point is it gets you your head around the idea of what it's like to do veggie for a day.
Yeah.
And then if you can do it for a day, well, you can do it for 2 days. So that is a good starting point.
Well, to be fair, I've made good progress in the last six months, trying to get the fam weaned off basically having meat every night for dinner. Switched to corn for a couple of things, which we really enjoy. I don't know the full environmental impact of corn. Well, it's basically like some kind of weird mushroom, by the sound.
Yeah, it's a fungal growth, isn't it?
I like it, and it goes down well with all the fam. Yep. So we're getting there, actually, to be fair.
Yeah.
So we need to get word out. I'll put a link to Cowspiracy in the show notes.
Yeah.
It's not what we're talking about today, I should add.
No, but you just blew me away with what you were just telling me about, and I'm going to have to go and watch it now. That's just bizarre.
Yeah, it's a good documentary. It's on Netflix, actually, as well, if anyone's got that, and you can watch it online for free as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure the producer and the chaps that made it won't mind us sharing it far and wide, because it's an important message, I think.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
What are we talking about this week? Oh, money.
Money, money, money.
Yeah, not a million miles away from that. We're talking about money and whether it does make you happy or not, because Sean had shared a link with me that he thought would be interesting to talk about in the show, so we're going to do that. First up, before that, sorry, I want to mention the website, liveinthepresent.co.uk. That's our website, so lots of show notes, links, a couple of resources at the end of the show that you'll be able to click on and find out more information about this topic. We do it every week, so all previous episodes are on the website as well. And if you stick your email address in one of the boxes on the show, we'll send you some free meditation files. 21 something, what is it? 21 steps, no, 21 days of happiness ebook.
You got there.
Hey. I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Loads of other bits and bobs too.
Yeah.
And a quick shout out to 123 Friday. If you see that logo on our website, give it a click. It's a great app that backs up all your photos and videos from your phone, so they're safe forevermore should you drop it in a river or, I don't know, people drop phones in toilets.
Yeah, I'm going to say toilets are favourites, yeah.
When you get your new phone or you swap phones, you can just download the app again, log in, and all the photos, videos and contacts will be there, ready to go again.
The important thing is don't pee whilst you're on the phone.
Don't pee. Well, don't do anything while you're on the phone, really, except for pace around. Driving and texting and is a big no-no these days.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
Do you know the word smombies, don't you? The smombies.
So. Smombies?
Yeah. People that are smartphone zombies.
Ah,
they're walking along in another world. They're smombies. They're smombies.
How you doing? You had a good New Year, Sean? Happy New Year, I should say.
Yeah, and a Happy New Year. Yeah.
Did you do much?
Well, we always have a Happy New Year around here, so there's always family and everything, which is great. It's good.
Yeah.
And I've decided that I'm going to start my new reincarnation in 2017. I'm going to change the way I work a bit and do more. I want to do more in the studio. We've got this app development coming on.
Yeah.
I want to get the apps going.
Yeah.
Do more writing. you know, so more time up there, which probably means doing less clinic time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a bit crazy anyway, so I need to kind of back away from the clinics a bit.
Take a bit of a breather.
Yeah.
Maybe not earn quite so much money, because it turns out, from what we're going to talk about in a bit, above a certain amount, it doesn't add to your happiness whatsoever. Yeah.
Once I got to my first 10 million, well, who cares?
Yeah. Should we crack on with the show?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you sent me a Daily Mail link, which initially I was sceptical of, because it's a horrendous rag of a newspaper. But, to be fair, the website is horrendously addictive. So when you do look at this, if you do look at this link that we're going to put in the show notes, try and avoid all the adverts and the...
And the come and look at this.
The little adverts on the side that they put there.
You there's just, things at the bottom that are really scary. They drag you off into other things.
Yeah, you will not believe what this person looks like now.
Now, yes.
Samantha Fox. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Half an hour later, you're in a...
Yeah, and you've gone bankrupt. Could you?
Yeah. Anyway, explain the article, Sean. I've read it, but...
Well, I mean, basically what the research is saying is it doesn't matter how much money you give people, it doesn't increase happiness. The things that increase happiness are not money.
Right. Yeah, well, it's a, I think it was the London School of Economics that have done some kind of research into it, and it was saying, well, there's 4 points, that basically money wasn't the key to happiness. Secondly, that eliminating poverty, there's been a lot of focus over the last 10, 15, 20 years on, you know, make poverty history, that kind of thing. But apparently making poverty history
in the UK.
Which is relative poverty, I guess, would reduce misery in the UK by just 5%, whereas tackling depression and anxiety would have a 20% effect.
Yeah, so, and one of the things that's really weird with that for me is the connection between people's desire to have money and have things and their experience of depression and anxiety because they haven't got them or they're trying to get them.
Yeah.
Actually feeds into the whole kind of we need more money stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive, those things, are they? And they're intrinsically linked, money and anxiety. So, yeah. I mean, should we talk a bit about the link between, from your experience, money and happiness? Because I've seen, when I've come along here to your house and there's been a client of yours here before me, I've seen some fancy cars parked out there.
Yeah.
So just because you've got a Bentley doesn't mean you're not subject to, or you can't be hit by the effects of depression.
I've had cars parked out here that are worth more than the house.
Yeah.
To me, it's profound. I've worked with so many people over so many years where people have had vast amounts of money. And I mean vast. I mean, I can remember working with one guy who had sold one of his houses, I'm talking about in the 80s now, he'd sold one of his houses for £3.5 million, one of his houses, and he was one of the most miserable people I've ever met.
So miserable in the sense that he just, well, generally not happy, or was he always searching for something that was just out of reach?
No, it was like, for him, creating money was kind of easy, so he just did it. But his life generally was kind of meaningless and kind of friendless, and it was all kind of hollow.
I mean, we do generally, groups of friends and whatever family will surround themselves with people of, you know, is it 20%?
10% usually.
Plus minus income bracket.
That kind of thing.
So when you get into those upper echelons, do you lose touch with people that can't keep up and you just find yourself out on your own? Or do you recommend that you went to some fancy, like, private members clubs where you could have met some other multi-millionaires?
He did.
Really?
But the issues... I suppose the two things I came across when I was working with those kinds of people was, one was that the people that were the main money earner, which was usually the man, but not always, weren't very happy people.
Yeah.
That was number one. Number two was that many of the women that were with them because of the status that it gave them and the fact that their kids could go to private school and all those kinds of issues, which very often led to women being treated quite badly by men who were quite depressed, but the women being trapped in something that kind of socially and financially they couldn't get out of.
Right.
It wasn't, although there was vast amounts of money, it wasn't like a happy society. Happy people. It was a lot of people wearing a mask that it was okay. Whether the mask was what they were wearing or what they had actually done to their face, or whether it was, you know, the car and the house and all that kind of stuff. But there was this this big show that was going on, which wasn't a happy show.
Right.
You know, people pretended that they were happy and like, yeah, woo, and they would talk it up.
Yeah, the part of the world we live in here on the Wirral is quite an interesting little place. I mean, you know, you're never that far from in the UK because it's quite a small place, England, Britain, the UK. You're never that far from poor places and you're never that far from well-off places. On the Wirral, it's quite profound,
it's
I think.
Bizarre. I mean, the weirdest place for me is Nocturum, where you have a street that's got million-pound houses in and the next street is a council estate.
Yeah.
And that's the contrast is really weird.
Yeah, and it's amazing, really. It's quite fascinating. But I mean, just because you look at how housing is set up in richer areas. Obviously, you tend to have more land. Maybe you might even have a big wall around your house for security. But you're kind of almost creating a little prison for yourself. Whereas the poorer areas are much more kind of community related. You're closer to shops, where you can just nip to get a pint of milk and you might meet a neighbour and have a nice chat with them, whereas rich areas, you know, they're not nipping out on foot to go and get a pint of milk, or they're hopping in the Range Rover.
Yeah. There aren't any local shops, are there?
Exactly, there aren't local shops.
No.
And so where I live, and my personal attitude and what I'm working on at the moment is to take a little bit of a step back financially, so work's going really well for me. Bethan started a new job, teacher, so she does okay. So we're at the stage now where really we could, if we wanted, make that upgrade in house, you know, with an extra bedroom, a bit more space, bigger garden, maybe a driveway. Imagine that. But, you know, I can see it doesn't take a genius to work out that what also comes with that is double the mortgage.
Yeah.
And then a bigger house that needs more work on it. And then, yeah, and we wouldn't have the same little community as where we live, necessarily.
I've had three huge houses in my life. And the last big one that I had, you know, 8 bedrooms, two staircases, load of bathrooms, was like shoveling money down a dragon's mouth. And the thing that you learn from big houses is you can actually only sleep in one bedroom, you can only use one living room and one bathroom. It doesn't matter how many you've got.
Yeah.
And it's easy to develop this idea that we need to have these things to feel good. But actually, they feed on you and they feed on themselves. So that if you've got a big house, you've got a lot of upkeep. If you've got an acre of grass to cut, it needs cutting. You can't always cut it yourself, so you've got to get someone else to do it. So you've got to earn the money to pay the other person to do it. And then you've got all the extra insurance issues. You've got the security issues. You know, you've got more windows to make sure that they're shut at night so Bill the burglar doesn't get in. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff to go with it. Whereas if you're living in a small kind of chalet where you can just walk around the outside and get everything's tickety-boo and go to bed, yeah, it's a different world. But we've developed this crazy need that we have to have stuff. But you and I always go on about stuffmas rather than Christmas. And it's true. It's true. And I've done it again this year. I've bought stuff for people.
Yeah. Have you had couriers knocking on the door every year?
All the time.
3-4 times a day.
All the time. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to work and I've got people banging on the door delivering parcels. And the trouble is I know them all. So it's like, hi, Sean. Hi, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Woo. Bye.
Yeah. Know? And just pausing for a second on couriers, it's quite an interesting line of work. I was chatting to the postman about couriers the other day because I'd seen a news article about them, about how much pressure couriers are under now, especially this time of year, but in general, because they're all like so self-employed basically, so they haven't got the protection of that salary or I don't know, sick pay, or they can't take holiday time really.
Yeah,
and they've got like 150, sometimes 200 deliveries to do a day,
and they've got to run from one to the other,
and they don't have time to
Do speed and all that kind of stuff.
It'd probably have to be the speed, yeah, over the limit. They don't have time for lunch or even to go to the bathroom. I've had one courier at my place. I remember asking if he could use my loo quickly because he could see it at the top of the stairs. I was like, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
And it's often their own van as well, so they're in, you know, if the van breaks down or they're off the road for a day or two.
Yeah.
No dosh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm developing this crazy idea that we all just need to take a step back. Like, you deal with a lot of managers, don't you, who've been promoted above the station and they find themselves at this level.
And they can't do the job.
All of a sudden they're under this, their lives must just be hell.
Yeah. Yeah, awfully stressful, terrible.
Mm. Yeah. So my advice, just take a step back financially.
Well, they, if you look at the Peter principle about the way organisations promote people, and promote people beyond their ability to do things,
Yeah.
It's reckoned that if everybody clicked back a grade, it'd probably work quite well. You know, but we get extended, overextended.
One of the recommendations in the article you sent to me was that there should be more lessons in school that focus on emotional well-being, which the, yeah, will it happen? I don't know, man. In a...
But what you've got to think of is what is education about? Education should be about teaching people and encouraging people to reach their own full potential, whatever that is for them. Yep. Yeah. What education is actually about is creating the next workforce. So we bleat on at the moment about how we want these kids who are very numerate and, what's the word, sort of articulate, I don't know, grammatically correct.
Academic and all that.
Whereas if we were still in an industrial society, we'd want people that were going to be apprentices to go and learn trades and skills. But education is about creating the next workforce.
Yep.
It's not about working to the needs of the people that we're training.
Yeah, and there's also an issue about outsourcing education to teachers who do a fantastic job under a lot of pressure as well.
Yeah.
But then what's the point of a kid learning about emotional well-being and sitting at school for an hour a day, maybe meditating or just chilling out, only to go home at the end of the day and see the parents kind of coming in at 6, 7 o'clock at night, exhausted after a tough day at work?
Well, no, I'm going to grab you. It's like...
Grab me?
Yeah, have a quick grab. The thing about if you teach the child mindfulness, so the magic of mindfulness is you learn to observe your thoughts and your feelings and your actions,
yeah,
which gives you a set of choices that you don't have when you're embedded in just the rat race of everyday survival. If you can sit above that, then like you're saying, that you don't want to get into this mad rat race situation. Mm. You want to keep it simple. And in keeping it simple, keep the happiness.
Yep.
Yeah? And I get that completely. And I do see so many people who are so unhappy because they have got to do this kind of get it bigger, do it more, bigger car, bigger house, you know, more holidays, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And you can drive yourself bonkers trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you're living in a lovely place and you're kind of happy and you're okay where you are, you don't need loads of holidays. You know, you don't need to go to Acapulco or wherever.
We go to the caravan up north.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but that's is it. When you go to the caravan up north and you've got places where the kids can just play, and that fabulous beach that they can just go and play.
I'm just thinking about it now, actually. They got a wave of happiness.
when we were in Norfolk last year,
you've got places you go to as well, man. Yeah. Really, yeah.
Yeah, but we were in Norfolk, and it was absolutely... It was one of the best holidays I have ever had.
Mm.
You know, it was us two together, which is always fabulous.
Yeah, I remember it was then, nice, me and you walking on the beach. Yeah. Oh, no, you and Ree, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was thinking of Norfolk. But Northumbria was good too. But no, I mean, like, because we spent a lot of time driving around Europe, to actually stay here for a summer and do that was really good. But it was well-being time. And that's the point about this article, is that the thing that makes the difference to people isn't money. The thing that makes the difference to people is whether they feel happy. And money and happiness don't correlate together. I would even suggest, I haven't looked at the evidence, but from my experience of working with people, I'd even suggest that the money makes people unhappy. Yeah? Either having it or the desire to have it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy thing to get involved in.
Yep.
And we live in a world where we expect things to get better year on year. We expect to be earning more next year than we earn this year.
Yep.
The problem is that to do that, all the prices have to go up. So the relative richness is really kind of diluted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. And we need a kind of a brave group of politicians or leaders that can kind of say without being mocked and ridiculed too much that, you know, we need an end to economic growth, like endless growth, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's politically it wouldn't fly at all, and it'd just be, especially if it was a Labour guy, which it probably will be, said that, you know, the Tories would be all over him saying, yeah, economic doom lies ahead for us all. But
why does it need to keep growing? Why?
I know. I know. No, I'm with you. It's true. There's a great book called The Great Disruption, which I've mentioned a few times on the show, but not for a while.
Which I haven't read. Which I must read.
Which has just blew my mind, really. And it kind of got me on this whole path of just learning about environmental issues, actually. Because it's coming one way or another. There's a big economic crash coming. Like, we'll make 2008 look like a walk in the park.
You reckon the disaster times, like 2050, you reckon?
Yeah, I don't want to be too doom and gloom, but yeah, all the stuff I'm reading.
But in terms of a break point, is that break social break? Is it a financial break? Is it an economic break? Is it a production break? Is it a food break?
It's all of them, really. Yeah, I mean, the environmental hit will probably, the serious, serious, massive hits, like in terms of huge sea level rise, that'll come at the end. Before that, you will have like mass migration. Like, obviously there's a lot of people moving from Syria at the moment, but that times 100 will start happening as people have to try and move away from areas that are under threat from whatever it is, because food supplies are just going to get hit so hard.
If around the equator it's getting hotter, people are going to have to move north and south.
Yeah, which is already happening, but I don't know.
Mm.
There's some interesting times on the way, but I'm not for sure. I mean, we might be all right. It might be all nothing, really, but it seems silly not to plan ahead and try and do something while we still can.
I think that the very story that you started out talking about the beef burger thing, you know, if you look at the damage that eating beef is doing to the world from an environmental point of view, and I bet you a million butchers will jump up and down at this and go, what do you mean? but if you look at the water, the ground that's cleared, so you lose the trees, you know, everything that goes with that.
If you look at this is the economy we've created, isn't it? To obviously the employee... a lot of people and lift a lot of people out of poverty. That's why people are fighting it, because, you know, it's brought growth and, inverted commas, happiness to a lot of people. So for us rich folks in the West to all of a sudden say, no, we can't do this anymore, you can't have that, you can't have coal power stations, nah, it's not a goer. You know, we're going to resist in it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
The whole beef thing's crazy, because, yeah, we clear all this land and we create all this... corn or feed that we could eat ourselves, but then we feed the cows and clear all the land for them as well. It's weird.
Whereas if you cut out the middleman and eat the corn,
yeah,
you don't need the beef.
Yeah, so interesting, hey? But yeah, can money make you happy? It can, but not necessarily, eh?
I think it depends on what you do with it, but it's like the issue of, you know, Harv Eker and the millionaire mind thing that he does. One of the things he talks about is that people have a financial blueprint, which is what they see as the right amount of money for them. And he points out lots of occasions where you give people money like they win the lotto.
Oh, yeah.
And what people do is they will spend it and get rid of it and give it away until they reduce it to an amount that to them is workable. Is
they're
okay?
Comfortable with, yeah.
Yeah, so that could be 50,000, it could be 100,000. Could be a tanner, whatever it is okay for them, but they will get rid of the rest because they can't cope with it.
Yeah.
So like having too much money is stressful. And one of the things about if you have £1 million in the bank, it won't affect the quality of your relationships with other people. It won't affect the quality of the relationship that you have with yourself. You know, you may be able to have a bigger house. You may be able to have more things. But it doesn't have any effect on you emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could play the game of, okay, you wouldn't have to work so hard, so you could go to the gym and you could go walking and stuff like that. But if you adopt the philosophy that you have, where if you don't need so much so that you can simplify life, it's much easier to get to that place without having £1 million.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. Yeah. I jokingly have as my Twitter and Instagram biography, richest man in the world. Which, yeah. And on Instagram, it's richest man in the world, here's the proof, and then it's all the photos and videos of all the mad antics.
Isn't that it? The richness that you're describing isn't about money. Mm. It may have money in it, but it's the richness of life and experience and people and emotion and...
I'm not immune to anxiety. And in fact, the only kind of anxiety... I get two kind of types of anxiety. First is financial, which hasn't been too bad over the last 6 months, 2 years maybe work's going all right. And the other is kind of just work-wise in terms of making sure I'm on top of my work and that all my clients are happy bunnies. That's the only two kind of... at the moment, I've got them quite nicely balanced, both of them, so I'm all right. But I need a bit of work to do.
I don't kind of have anxiety, I don't think. I had anxiety when I was younger and when I had problems with drugs and stuff like that. I had anxiety then. But yeah, having been through some of the life things I've been through, I don't really get into anxiety. I see us human beings more from the point of view of we have this amazing creative potential to solve problems. And when I see problems happening and coming up, I think collectively, yep, we have the capacity to solve them. We may be too stupid to use that collective intelligence to solve them. But whether that is at a kind of a smaller level, like, oh, you know, I need more money, though, okay, I'll go and do this and create more money, mm-hmm, and that kind of stuff. But everything for me is we don't have the problems, we have the challenges, if we see it like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, don't know. I mean, I certainly get the idea that there are people that have very little who think it's okay for me saying that, and that we want to go on holiday somewhere. You know, I get that. And I think that if we shared more, then we'd all be in a better position. But the evidence here is that the extra money doesn't actually make that much difference. And, I mean, that's research-based evidence, which... Okay, statistics may be statistics.
Yeah.
But one of the things that is very important for me is that what we see as the poorest people in this country are still in the 10% richest people on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, which is a huge concept to put your head around. You know, I wonder why people want to come into Europe.
Mm.
You know, because we do have a relative richness, that is true.
We do,
but
indeed.
But if we shared, we'd all have it. And by all, I mean our African brothers, our Indian brothers, our Syrian brothers, I mean all of them. And sisters, I wasn't being sexist.
I try not... I'm a bit of a Twitter addict, so I... you know, and most of the people I follow, kind of in terms of journalists and kind of thought leaders, have a similar kind of worldview to me, quite liberal, open-minded, that kind of thing. So I click every now and again. If there's a bold claim about Brexit or Trump, I'll click on it and I'll look at the replies to see, because just wait for the people that disagree to get involved. So I was having a good old ding dong with someone about Brexit the other week. What was it about? He was blatantly like an anti-immigration dude, but quite a forthright one, you know, racist. So I didn't worry too much about it, but yeah. Had a bit of a ding dong about immigration. He was talking about us and them and all that. And, you know, I'm indigenous, and I was like, well, I thought we were all immigrants.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, speak for yourself. I don't know if he's Cockney, by the way.
he wrote like a Cockney.
Yeah, it's like, how far back do you need to go? Not that far. And yeah, and at some point, his grandfather, great grandfather, whatever, will have come over here on a boat or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking for a place to put his head down and get on in life.
Most people, though, we like to think of them, you know, that lot, as being, they're all criminals and they're all out to get us. Most people want to live with a family group. They want to raise their kids. They want to do all the basic things. They want to be fed and warm.
Yep.
You know, it's the natural human condition. It may get warped through dogmas and beliefs and stuff like that. But essentially, that's what people want. And if we shared, then it would be okay. You know, there is enough for everybody if we share it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, you got resource of the week, Sean?
My resource of the week is a website, which is Mindfulness in Schools Project.
Okay, cool.
There is a growing movement of mindfulness in education. And getting kids to be able to sit down, focus, be able to identify that observer self who can observe behaviours. And there is massive evidence of the effect that it has on the situation in the school. There's a person I work with, Geraldine, who runs something called Mindflow, which is active in the Northwest. And she does a lot of mindful stuff in schools.
Okay.
Yeah, Mindflow is worth having a look at.
Might send it the way of the head teacher at my little lad's school.
Yeah.
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 Cool.
But that whole idea that if we can get kids to be more mindful, then the drive towards happiness relative to material, the material need of stuff, the balance will change if we get more mindfulness going.
Yep.
You know, and I'm not saying that we all need to live in, you know, tents and you know, everyone needs a fridge and a cooker and all that kind of stuff. You know, we need decent stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, but we only need decent stuff. We don't need decent stuff with knobs on, and we don't need decent stuff every 5 minutes to upgrade and change. And
yep.
You know.
For sure. Okay, cool. My resource is a School of Life video, 10-minute clip they've done about the history of consumerism, which takes it right back to pre-money, really. But
That's interesting. I'm going to have to watch that one.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Snappy little video, but Alain de Botton narrates it, and he's just my hero.
Yeah.
And it's quite actually good. I follow him on Twitter as well, and he's a very placid, chilled out guy usually, but the last few months, obviously, or last 6 months, on given what's going on in the world, he's kind of found this mad energy of like against Trump and the EU referendum and all that stuff. So yeah, loving it.
Yeah.
When you got guys like that on your side, you just know that you're on the right side.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
To put it bluntly.
The problem is that throughout human history, the forces of sanity haven't always prevailed.
No.
You know, and does that mean... I mean, the last big conflagration that we had was the Second World War, with the kind of fascist, Nazi situation.
Yeah, another one, Simon Sharma, he's a historian.
Yeah.
So I follow him on Twitter, and he's just going...
Great,
he's going absolutely nuts at the moment, like absolutely laying into Trump. Not as doing much good, or did much good, because he did pre-election as well. But again, when you know you've got like a serious historian that knows everything about how these things work out, why didn't we listen to these guys? My word, crackers. But, all right, there we go.
Yeah. We're in weird times.
Yeah, good fun. 2017, do your bit, guys. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. Check it out, all the show notes and links. Check out the 123 Friday app as well if you can. It helps the show out, helps keep it free, and it's a good little good app as well, really solid bit of technology. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well. Lots of cool stuff going on there all the time. Sean, leave it there.
That's absolutely fabulous.
I shall see you next week.
Yeah, I'll see you before then.
Alright, enjoy Cowspiracy.
Yeah.
See you later.
See ya. Bye.